For years, I've been discussing a dream expedition that would bring some of this case's brightest minds together in a collaboration that could rewrite history forever. Sometimes, when you're investigating a scene like the one unfolding in Buka, you get lucky enough to pull an ace. And boy, have we ever got one for you tonight. Dick Spink is one of my very favorite people in all the Earhart story. He's a real-life Indiana Jones, a now-retired high school teacher that has spent his time out of the classroom running investigative trips all over the Marshall Islands. He's one of the most connected people in this entire story, the face of history's lost evidence, among many others, and one of the loudest voices in the room when it comes to the Japanese capture hypothesis. But what you don't know is, since they originally met in 2018 at the Amelia Earhart Festival, Dick Spink and Bill Snavely have been talking. We've been name-dropping his involvement for months. Now, tonight, he makes it official. This is Dick Spink. This is, as I said offline, one return conversation that I've wanted to have for some time, and now we have some practical reasons to sit down together again and discuss a whole lot of things tonight. But first, Dick, welcome back to the show. Thank you, sir.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, as I said, lots to unpack tonight. I want to start by addressing the elephant in the room. We've come out, we've done a lot of recent pushing to promote Buka 3, and one of the things we've discussed is your involvement in it, and you're set to really play a pivotal role in helping Bill determine exactly what this aircraft out at Buka is. We'll get to how this may or may not tie into Japanese capture and some of the work you've been doing for so long, but to get started, I have two questions for you.
Yes, sir.
How did you get involved in this, and more importantly, why did you choose to get involved in this?
Well, you know, you're referring specifically to Buka.
I am.
Okay. Well, you know, when I was first at our Atchison meeting that you held and got us all together shortly after I did the History Channel show, meeting Bill Snavely, Bill is a very good man. I really enjoy Bill. He's just a wonderful guy. And after talking to him for a long time and then seeing what he had, and then he sent me a copy of his book, and I've been talking to Bill, gosh, ever since, you know, it's been, what, 4 years now since we all met in Atchison. And I've talked to Bill off and on since then. And, you know, I filled him in on all the things that we were doing on Japanese capture. And I'm very ingrained in the Japanese capture with everything that has happened that I've been involved with it. But Bill is the only person that has an airplane. I mean, at this point, there's not a lot of information about the airplane other than, you know, he came up with a, you know, a landing light cover that was kind of specific to a Lockheed. He came up with measurements that were somewhat close as best he could tell with the coral encrusted wreckage. And so, you know, it piqued my interest, you know, as the main thing is he has an aircraft and it's in 105 feet of water with all the work that I've done in the Marshall Islands. And what I do with Martin Daly constantly and the stuff that I do in my export business, I happen to have a ship out there with Martin Daly, actually two ships that we can use for the recovery of this aircraft. You know, he's been talking to me about it for quite a while. And I put prices together on what it would take to have an aircraft very well equipped, Indies Trader fleet, that I go run a boat for Martin Daly every once in a while in the Pacific. I'm a Coast Guard captain, so I go out and do some contract shipping down this line. Anyway, Martin has two boats, Indy Surveyor and the Windward. The Windward was the one we did the History Channel television show on. And then Indy's Trader, which it's going to be on a job in truck for a while, so we can't use that boat, but Martin's new boat, Indy Surveyor. And both of these boats are very well dive-equipped boats, probably some of the best in the Pacific, with cranes, lifting bags, everything that we need. need to pull that up.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill was talking about all the different people that he has that need to be on the ship, specifically about 5 different people, because we have to make sure we have all the right permissions from everyone.
Yeah.
Then we got to make sure nobody can come by and confiscate our ship.
Right.
The amount of fuel and everything that it's going to take. I mean, I need to raise around $130,000 to be able to pull this boat up off the bottom, because by the time you look at fuel and everything else, I mean, half of that's just going to be fuel alone, not to mention provisions for a crew and everybody else to take care of this. So, you know, and I've been working with Jim Hayton as well. Jim is probably the most, the knowledge, he's just a warehouse of knowledge of aircraft. He's rebuilt several Lockheed, and he knows every single part, piece, and rebuilds Pratt & Whitney engines.
Yeah.
He'd be definitely on the crew that would be able to identify anything. And what we'd do is we'd go down and we'd specifically take a look and see what type of parts we could pull up, creating the least amount of damage to the wreckage for an absolute identification of that aircraft. And that's how I got involved in this whole portion of it.
Yeah, I'm going to hit you with some fun stuff tonight. And I think this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back on. So Bill's got a new book out. The book is called Lost in Flight, Amelia Earhart Giving Decoy for a Spy Plane.
Oh, I got Bill's book. I talk to Bill all the time. Bill is just a great man.
Yeah, he is. And I'm glad to hear you say that. This idea that he's positing is not a new one. It's been floated by some pretty major heavyweights in the case, including Paul Rafford, the late great Woody Peard, as well as Ann Pellegrino, of course, who completed Earhart's Round the World flight. Give me your thoughts on that. Is it possible that 2 identical planes took off on or around the same time, both with different roles in an overall larger mission?
Well, you know, I'm not going to say absolutely yes, right?
Right,
because there's just too many variables in something like this, and there are some things that have come out of the entire search for Amelia Earhart that have been, some of them have been absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
My whole line down the entire thing has been the 200 eyewitnesses. Mm-hmm. General Alexander Vandergriff, all of the different people, you know, Admiral Nimitz. Who said to 1965 to Fred Gorner, you know, never give up, you're on to something that will stagger your mind.
Yeah.
General Alexander Vandergriff, who said 1971 in a letter that, you know, Earhart was in Saipan.
Mm-hmm.
Graves V. Erskine, who led the amphibious assault, in a CBS interview, 1965. Earhart was in Saipan and she died there. Not to mention the other 200 eyewitnesses that saw Amelia Earhart from Milly Atoll, where I led my 9 expeditions in the Marshall Islands, all the way through to the 2 expeditions I led in Saipan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very ingrained in Amelia Earhart landing at Milly Atoll simply because of all of my relatives in the Marshall Islands and how I stumbled into that whole thing, not even looking for her, and found what I found and did what I did, which ended up in being the History Channel show, as well as the show I did, Mysteries at the Museum with Don Wildman.
Yeah.
It's just too amazing to sit and look at this. And then you ask, okay, what about the 2 airplanes, spy planes and such? And so I don't know. I mean, to sit here and say, is it possible? Well, sure, it's possible. Absolutely. But first of all, we got to start talking about airplanes. I mean, what other planes could it possibly be?
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing. Now, Bill has got some documentation that said there were 2 planes that left Le New Guinea on the same day that were very similar aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Hayton even had a sister that lived in Le New Guinea. And you can talk to Jim about that. And she has heard of that story. Jim has got so many connections in so many ways. It's amazing.
I can't wait.
But okay, so let's talk. Is it possible? Well, let's look at the aircraft. Well, the Lockheed 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lockheed built what? 150, 149, I think, of those aircraft.
That's right.
And they built them in 4 different versions, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was the A, there was the B, the C,
the D,
which they never went into production with because that was a transport version. And of course, the E, which there were only 15 of the E built, which Amelia flew.
Yeah.
Okay, that was just it. The Electra, the 10, was what started it all.
Yeah.
Then there was the Junior Electra, which was the 12.
Right.
Then the 14. So now Lockheed built, if we look at the Super Electra, which is the 14, which I think there's a chance of this plane being Electra 14 because there were a lot of Electra 14s built. Lockheed in the United States built, I believe, around 110, 112, 14 Super Electras, but they also sold 10 to the Japanese Imperial Navy for evaluation. And then I believe Lockheed contracted, and this is a fact, Lockheed contracted with, oh God, what was the name of the company? It was Takakawa.
Oh yeah, that's right.
To build 100 and 1920, Lockheed Super Electrus, and then also Kawasaki. And Kawasaki built another 120. Japan actually built more Electras than the United States did.
Yeah.
Okay. The 14, the Super Electra, was about 6 feet longer than the 10.
Yeah.
So is it possible that that's one of those, that this plane that Bill's talking about? Because that would be a Lockheed. And there was a lot of those in the world. Now, according to the dimensions and things that Bill has, it doesn't look like that. Mm-hmm. It looks like it is potentially a 10. Mm-hmm. So
I know it's hard to speculate. I know it's just speculation at this point, because you haven't been out there yet. We haven't been out there yet. So I know it's a tough question to answer. I mean, anything could be possible at this point, really.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
It's just, if nothing else, what Bill says, and this is one of the reasons I have so much respect for Bill. Bill says, hey, if this is Amelia Earhart's Electra, if this is some other airplane that we pull up off the bottom, we're going to give closure to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really good man to say that. He says, you know, it might not be her plane. Yeah. And, you know, it might not be the decoy plane, but, you know, it's going to be somebody's airplane.
Yeah.
And we have an airplane. Mm. And that's why I got involved with Bill. I said, Bill, I'll help you get that plane off the bottom. All we got to be able to do is raise enough money to where we can pay for this. Mm. And there's not going to be a profit in this either. This is going to be me go out and pull this thing up off the ground.
Yeah. You've talked about leading multiple expeditions. Certainly someone of your stature doesn't need this expedition. I mean, if you had to speculate, though, what do you think you find out at Buka? Is it a 14? Is it a Lockheed 10 really similar to what a 10E might have looked like? I mean, do you think we get that close and it's like, man, it's that near of a miss?
Well, you know, Bill does say that there is also a possibility that this plane was built in secret by Lockheed or someone of the military, in which case we wouldn't have serial. I have a record of every single serial number on every part that had a serial number on it on Amelia Earhart's airplane.
Yeah.
And whatever part, especially some of these parts that wouldn't decay underwater,
right,
we'd be able to absolutely identify her airplane if it was her airplane.
Yeah.
Now, as far as if it's another plane that was built in secret somewhere, then, you know, how are we going to prove what it is? I know Bill's been talking with Pratt & Whitney, and they're very involved in wanting to become involved in this recovery. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very interested in it to do it because, you know, I'm retired now, and I still just do a lot of things on the side, a little bit of property development, a little bit of shipping still overseas to all my overseas customers. So I would have the time to do this, especially if it's in the wintertime. I live in the Pacific Northwest. I wouldn't mind getting back down to some tropical weather for a few weeks.
Well, perks of the job. Let's shift to Japanese capture a little bit. It's been several years since you first appeared on this show. That was right after The Lost Evidence aired. I figure we're long enough removed from it now where we can talk a little bit more about it. In retrospect, how was that experience for you overall?
Well, you know, it was really great because, you know, I'd stumbled into it. I mean, when I first got involved in Amelia Earhart was about 2010, 2011, on one of my trips to the Marshall Islands, where I met Ramsey Reimers, who's my Marshallese brother. I mean, Ramsey saw one of my ads online for building aluminum boats, and he just called me up. And we talked for a little bit and says, listen, I want to fly you to the Marshall Islands. And he flew me to the Marshall Islands, and I got to meet a lot of different people. Ramsey's very connected in the Marshall Islands. And we were sitting at Tony DeBroom's place. Tony DeBroom is a member of the parliament in the Marshall Islands.
Yeah.
And we had the president was there, and we were sitting around a table, and we were talking about the Marshall Islands and the World War II relics, because it was quite a theater of war in World War II. As we're sitting around the table, I just brought up the topic. Hey, didn't Amelia Earhart disappear in this part of the world? You know, being someone who grew up in the United States, that's what happened to her officially, is she just crashed and sank. And so I said, didn't she crash someplace out here? And then the old guy at the end of the tip said, no, you know, she landed on our island. My uncle watched her for 2 days.
Yeah.
And I kind of chuckled and started laughing at the guy. And I had Tony DeBroom and Ramsey chewed me out because you're not supposed to laugh at a king. And so anyway, it went from there to the next stage, which I'll listen to these accounts. And I started recording these accounts. And you've seen some of the interviews that I've done with some of these people who are very well connected. And it's just Amelia Earhart being in the Marshall Islands. It's just known that's the truth. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. You know, they don't think it's that big of a deal. So what? She was here. Yeah, she was here. You know, a lot of people saw her.
Yeah.
That's how it started for me. You know, then I started organizing the first expedition down to Millie after talking to many of the old people whose parents were involved in it. It just went from there.
Yeah.
I started looking at all the evidence and, you know, all of the people that saw things happening and, you know, and the people that were first on the stage, researchers. And then when I first broke the information, everybody in the Amelia Earhart world was calling me.
Yeah.
When I first broke some of the things I found. And, you know, I had a lot of people flying in to see me. Harris flew in to see me. Rich Martini flew in to see me to see the things I had and talk to me about it. You know, I started originally working with Carol Dow.
Yeah.
And then I met Les Kinney. And Les Kinney, as far as researchers on Amelia Earhart, he is head and shoulders above everyone else. And when he does ever finally get his book published, and I keep asking him, Les, when are you going to have that book done?
Yeah.
It will be the official encyclopedia to what happened with Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, he's filed over 200 Freedom of Information requests that have been denied.
Yeah.
Les just knows everything there is to know about it. And so I started working with Les. I did both my trips to Saipan. I did with Les, took Les on one of my expeditions that Parker came in involved in. Parker Aerospace funded me on one expedition. I took Les on that one. And that's when we came up with, you know, the ground penetrating radar and came up with a few items that were, you know, rolled aluminum off of a Lockheed. So,
yeah.
I mean, and one thing led to another right up to the point when we put the History Channel show together and Les had come up with that photograph of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan on the dock.
Mm.
One thing is just led to another.
Talking about Buka, we're talking about Japanese capture. I'll get to my eventual in-game question at the end of this conversation. But what you've been up to since Lost Evidence, you've been very busy, obviously, a lot on your plate. How does what you're working on with Japanese capture and everything you've been working on for a very long time there, how does that potentially tie into Buka 3? What does Buka 3 do for you to assist that potentially?
Well, you know, I got to separate the two.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, there are so many unknowns
mm-hmm.
that I don't think you can tie everything together. I mean, really, there are only a few possibilities to whatever happened to Amelia Earhart. Mm-hmm. One of them's, of course, crash and sank mm-hmm. as a possibility. The Japanese capture, which has all of the evidence,
yeah.
all of the eyewitnesses, everybody that was involved, that when they really do their research, comes through that. Well, now, the way Bill is looking at Buka, it follows a bit of that line. And that's why Bill, he had several acknowledgments to me in his book
yeah.
that he just wrote.
Yeah.
I want to be able to help him with his theory on the side.
Mm-hmm.
That is not my main straight thing, but Bill is just such a good guy. And if this entire account of what he has comes to fruition and we have a plane that we can't identify, mm-hmm. we don't know whose it is, mm-hmm. where it came from,
yeah.
that's just going to add more to that side of his theory. And if it's Amelia Earhart's mm-hmm. airplane, of course.
Yeah.
All in all, I stay with my line mm-hmm. down the Marshall Islands. I'm helping Bill on the side do what he needs to do. Like I said earlier, someone is going to get closure on this plane in Buka.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, back to the Marshall Islands. Let's talk a little bit about the dock photo. That's been obviously at the center of the investigation for some time, since prior to 17, but officially exploded in 17 with Lost Evidence.
Yeah.
You talked about how you felt when you came on the show in retrospect, and that was right after Lost Evidence, as I mentioned. Now we've had some years pass. It's been out in the ether. What are your thoughts, dock photo?
Well, Morningstar Entertainment, I still am involved with yeah. them, and we do have potentially another series of shows coming out on that.
That's great.
So I'm not really at liberty to say. However, I can tell you that we do have some more forensic analysis on that photograph
mm-hmm.
that does place that photograph as being accurate and
yeah.
truly being Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, just like we had it placed on the television show. How are we to know that we were going to get blogged by somebody that just said from the Japanese government official that said, oh, no, we have that photograph in our official books. And it was dated in 1935, 2 years before she took off.
Yeah.
And then that just, I mean, it took our ratings away and everything from the show.
Yeah.
So there has been information done on that. And at this point, potentially another show coming out in, I can't tell you exactly when
yeah.
because we don't know for sure, but that has been quite an interesting chapter.
Yeah. If we get out to Buka and we identify an aircraft out there as an L-10E, like you said earlier, and it's not Earhart's, but it's an L-10E, what do you do at that point? What would you do? I mean, you're captaining this thing. What are you going to do if you get out there and it's a positive? Jim Hayton gives us a positive ID. It's an L-10E. It's not Earhart's. We're dealing with a ghost plane, no?
Well, yeah, we are dealing with a ghost plane.
Yeah.
At that point, if it is an L-10E, we're dealing with a ghost plane. So what we do is we go back to Pratt & Whitney because If there are engines on them, we're going to have a serial number if they built the engine and try and trace. I mean, we're going to try and trace records anywhere we can. At that point, if it's a ghost plane, then I'm sure we would be able to get some funding, some additional funding to forensically remove every piece off the bottom there in another expedition. I mean, that's a whole different story there.
Yeah, well, truly, I really don't think money is going to be a problem if that's discovered out there. And we don't know what it is. It's an L-10E, but we know it's not Earhart's. I feel like money would be the least of our worries at that point to get funding to get to the bottom of it, you know.
Let's try it. And New Guinea Airways, they flew a few L-10s. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of L-10s down in that region of the area. But there's only one way to find out now, and that is to pull that plane up off the bottom and try and identify it and go from there.
So speaking of the case in general, that's how you move these things forward, no? I mean, what we're trying to do here is eliminate theories at the end of the day, because you want to take, you know, you're working Japanese capture. There's so much work into it. Anybody who's listened to this show and most of Vanish will know how much work has gone into that. This is a theory that's got a plane, as you talked about at the top of the show. It's become hard to ignore. Is it now like you have to kind of get out there and just rule this thing out at the very least so we can move forward with the case?
Well, ideally, what you'd want to do, unless of course your name is Rick Gillespie and then you just come up with some other outlandish story and create something else and regurgitate the same material you did 5 years earlier and go in and run again.
Yeah.
What we try and do is you try and follow all the evidence with science and you back it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I love about working with Les Kenny, is because he has a source and documentation for everything he puts down. Everything.
Yeah, right.
Several sources. And that's what we have to do this. I mean, we have to be able to back things up. You know, that's what's taken Les so long to get everything done with his book, the amount of documentation that he backs everything he says up with. And so that's what we got to do.
You've mentioned another name, Jim Hayton, tonight. He's going to hopefully make his long-awaited debut to the show pretty soon. But ahead of that debut, I wonder if you could just give our listeners an idea of what they can expect and tell us who Jim is. Go into a little bit more detail about why he's so vital to Buka 3's potential success, what you're working on Japanese capture with. Tell me who Jim Hayton is.
Jim is an incredibly interesting man. He has an airplane shop and he rebuilds aircraft. He's a licensed airframe and power plant mechanic from just about every little puddle jumper there is all the way to Boeing aircraft. And he is worked with the FAA for many years as an investigator. And some of the planes that he has rebuilt have been, he's been involved in rebuilding two Lockheed L-12s. He's been involved in Lockheed Lodestars, and he knows just about everything there is. He's a certified Pratt & Whitney mechanic. He can identify just about every part that you could pull off of an airplane. I've used Jim myself. Mm-hmm. I have several clients in Africa that fly Cessna aircraft, and when they can't get a part, I call Jim, and Jim will build the part. All you got to do is give him a serial number for anything on a Cessna, and Jim will fabricate that part for you. With everything there is to involved with an aircraft, Jim Hayton happens to know. And knowing that, I took Jim as well as Les on the Parker Aerospace expedition that I did to Millie. And Jim was one of the first ones to, you know, look at these parts and say, hey, you know, this is what this is. This is what that is. And Jim is, as you'll, when you get him on the phone, you will know. And Jim happened to have an inventory, the Goodyear air wheels that were the same air wheels that Amelia Earhart had on her airplane. He had out the back. He's just
that's
a brilliant man.
That's great. Well, to steal a line from Ghostbusters, we have the tools, we have the talent for Buka 3. Let's discuss what we can of the plan. You touched on Martin Daly ships. Tell me about some of the equipment you want to bring out and how that equipment and, you know, having this crew is going to get us an answer. I mean, I know we've talked offline. You're confident you can get us an answer. Tell me about what you're going to use to do that.
Well, like I mentioned, there's two ships that Martin has that we could schedule in. And that's to do with, I've been talking to Bill about getting a schedule to do this. And this is going to take some time to schedule it in. Each of these aircrafts, the Windward has a crew of three, and it can take up to 11 people on expeditions. The ships are within about a five-day trip of Buka, very well equipped with dive bags, dive compressors, dive gear, dive chambers, cranes, and all of the rigging that we would need to make a real good rescue of this aircraft that's been down since 37. As far as the rest of the crew that's going to be on there, I know Bill has got at least five people that need to be on the crew, government people, so we don't get in any trouble, don't step on anybody's toes, and we make the pickup of what we need to identify, with Jim Hayton, of course, being one to identify our parts on the deck, because he's probably the person that's the best, you know, the most knowledgeable to do that. The Indy Surveyor, it'll have a crew of three, but I don't think it holds, sleeps up to 11. There's a few less people on that, but I think it would also, we're going to have a pretty good camera crew documentation, and you were going to be involved in that, I believe, weren't you? Are you still planning on being involved in
God
that?
God willing.
You know, Matthew Arnold has even said, I want to be on that team.
Well, I'll tell you what, I spoke with Matt a couple weeks ago, and I would absolutely love to have him there. But yeah, that's the plan for me. I'd love to just be there to be part of it, to witness it, to document it. I'm there.
I got to get you up to the Marshall Islands too, you know.
It's a dream. We got to go out. I know we talked about it before, so we got to go out.
I can put together, if we can get together, you know, 5 or 6 people, even 10 people, mm-hmm. we could do a heck of an expedition down to Millie, down to the island where she landed, and I could follow you through those footsteps. That would be really interesting to do that. Yeah. I took Matthew Arnold through, oh boy, I started in Saipan with Matt. We went from Saipan to Guam, and then I took him to several different atolls visiting old Japanese seaplane bases mm-hmm. that were bombed out, and today they're still the same day they were in 1945 when they were bombed. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time in the Marshall Islands and have visited a lot of that area. You know, the Marshall Islands is 1 million square miles in area, yet the landmass is only about the size of Rhode Island. So, and it's just very, really scattered out. Yeah. I know a lot of it. I have some ships there that I can use. So, you know, we can get something like that organized sometime if you want
to. Yeah, stay tuned for that. I'm definitely interested in that. You know, when you get out there, knowing what you know, is there a specific part of the site that intrigues you? What are you going to be going for? Are you going after the engines? Can you talk about that? If you can't, that's okay.
Well, you know, it depends on the stage of corrosion with this. Yeah. I mean, from everything that Bill has got and told me about, there is a lot of, and I talked to Bill about what I can and can't talk to you about. Yeah. And really, at this point, I don't know a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, I can pretty much talk to you about everything I know about. Yeah. And that is that the plane is extremely encrusted in coral. Yeah. And that's why they weren't able to give real good documentation as to what it is. Mm-hmm. A lot of magnesium, depending on the different metals, magnesium, aluminum, stainless steel, and different steels, the rate of corrosion is different on all of these. If we tried to hook up to something and pull it up, we'd probably hook onto like a crankshaft propeller hub and just gently lift it up and see what all comes with it.
Yeah.
Just, we want to find one part that we can get a serial number off of to begin the identification. Mm. So that's probably what we'd do is hook onto a part like that that's going to be pretty solid. Mm. Whatever comes up with it comes up with it. Just lift it up off the bottom. I mean, we don't want to just totally destroy this wreck in case we need to really, really lift the whole thing up and completely piece it back together as an aircraft. You know, if it were to be a Amelia Earhart's aircraft, you know, of course, we're going to take everything, including the dirt around it, up and completely reconstruct it.
Yeah.
But at this point, we just want to try and make an absolute identification of the aircraft. Once we get the ships on site, we send divers down. I'll be on the divers crew, and we're going to go down and we're just going to take a look and spend probably the first couple of days just looking at it, seeing what we can do, what we can lift, what we can't lift, mm-hmm. how bad this is going to be, if we need to chip away at some of the coral around the outside so we don't take up too much coral. There's just going to be a lot of investigation. And Martin Daly, he's lifted a few World War II aircraft off the bottom before, and his team, and he's got a really good team.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of investigation done before we know what we're going to do.
Right.
That's really the way it is, Chris. Yeah. So I can't really answer that question right straight out.
No, that's okay. That's an honest answer. I have an interesting question as we kind of wrap up here tonight. Do you ever worry about the criticism you might face for doing this from a professional standpoint? Or is all that shit just irrelevant to you at this point?
There's always criticism. I'm getting some pretty thick skin towards a lot of criticism. I mean, you pretty much have to.
Yeah.
But, you know, after you sit down and talk with people like I have for a long time over Japanese capture and all of the evidence that goes through that line and all the speaking that I do around the country for people, when I get asked to go speak and talk about Amelia Earhart, the presentation I make is based on some really solid evidence that has been backed up by a lot of people. After I have a chance to sit down and talk with people and explain to them all of the evidence that's along that line, they come away thinking, wow, I didn't know that. This is really something.
Yeah.
And all of the people that really go in to start investigating Amelia Earhart usually come away with that. Yeah. And they think, boy, there's just too much there to think that it went any other way.
Yeah.
Now, and the this is something, you know, Bill, his whole line of thought on this partially goes along with that.
Yeah, agreed.
And so, you know, he's talking about this other aircraft. Mm-hmm. And okay, fine. Let's go get it.
I love it. All right. Final question of the night, sir, before we get out of your way. And it's a good segue into what you just mentioned. We've talked a lot. The overarching theme, I think, of tonight's conversation is the idea of a bigger picture going on here. Maybe some of the folks working some various theories have a piece of a much larger puzzle. So we've talked about what happens if we get to Buka and it actually is her plane. I want to know, just from a professional standpoint, you have all these eyewitnesses, 200 plus in the Marshallese and the U.S. government and the United States military. That's very, very hard to ignore. If this plane out at Buka is indeed an L-10E and a serial number matches and we can confirm it, what does it do for Japanese capture? What does it do for you? How do you redirect? Do you have to pivot? What's your next move? What does your gut tell you?
You mean if this is Amelia Earhart's aircraft?
If it's Earhart's aircraft, what does that do?
If this aircraft in Buka is Amelia Earhart's aircraft, you want to know
what do you do? Tell me what you do if that happens. You're captaining the ship. You're going to know right away.
I'd have to take a pretty serious wander of investigation into Mr. Bill Snavely's other aircraft. You know, I mean, if it is her aircraft, then maybe this other airplane is who Mr. Snavely says it is.
I love that.
And that's what I love about Bill. He's just a good guy, because in the same breath, he'll say, and if it's not, it's going to be somebody's airplane and we're going to know who it is.
Yeah, that optimism is very contagious.
That's why I want to go help Bill. I want to raise the money we need to raise, you know, Chris, with your help and whatever we can do to raise the money we need to raise. Like I said, we're going to have to raise about $130,000 to do this, because it's anytime you put a ship out in the Pacific, a capable ship to do it needs to be done the right way. It's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of that, we promise we're getting out of here tonight. People are listening to this. What can they do? How can they contact you? How do they help if they want to help donate some money, donate some talent, whatever it is? What would you suggest they do?
Well, Chris, I we need to put together something. This is still fairly early on in the stage of doing it. I've talked with Bill about how much money we need to raise, but we have not sat down now and figured out a funnel for that money, where it's going to go, who it's going to go to. But we need to do that, whether that is, I mean, Bill's put in, you know, a couple $100,000 of his own money so far. I've put in almost $100,000 into my Amelia Earhart projects. I told myself I was only going to do this for 5 years when I first sat down with E. Roach and Ramsey and Tony DeBroom in the Marshall Islands and asked, didn't Amelia Earhart disappear in this part of the world? I said I was only going to do that for 5 years. I'm at 10 now, so I don't expect to let Amelia Earhart destroy my life by chasing this. And so I'm not going to do this for a lot longer. Mm-hmm. However, I will continue to just kind of work on the fires that are going now. And once they go out, I'm probably going to be done with it.
This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to this episode of Chasing Earhart. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where we post each new episode as it airs, news, show information, and group discussion. Go to facebook.com/ChasingEarhart, and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle @ChasingEarhart. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to Apple Podcasts to rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Your editor and host for Chasing Earhart is me, Chris Williamson. The show is produced by my wife, Vanessa Williamson, with music by Dane Jarris Schmidt. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Madhouse Films Incorporated. Madhouse Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All clips and audio used in the podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of historical entertainment and education, and no infringement is ever intended. Chasing Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Madhouse Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Madhouse Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Chasing Earhart is a Madhouse Films production. All rights reserved.